This is Donald Hasig. This is a Persistent Organic Pollutants Exposure Minimization Conference. The purpose of the conference is to discuss strategies for accomplishing POPs exposure minimization. The POPs exposure minimization needs done because the scientific knowledge has accumulated to the extent that it is clear that all those who consume animal fats around the world are experiencing a significant amount of disease risk from the POPs exposure that they incur, and that those who inhabit the vicinity of POPs contaminated sites are being put at more than a significant, probably a major amount of disease risk. David Carpenter, MD, David O. Carpenter, MD, is our scientific expert. He's a top international POPs adverse health effects and exposure scientist. Good morning, Dr. Carpenter.
Hi, Don.
Let's start with you giving us your story in brief, and then go to the World Health Organization report titled Persistent Organic Pollutants Impact on Child Health.
Well, I was actually going to start pretty much around that report,
Let's hear a little of your story.
Two things are all very much intertwined. The World Health Organization released this report just a short time ago. I was one of the contributors to the report, and one of my colleagues here in Albany was actually a major writer at the time. She worked for the World Health Organization. This report focuses specifically on these persistent chemical contaminants like PCBs and dioxin and DDT and other chlorinated pesticides and their effects on children. And let me talk a little bit about effects on children, but then go on and talk a little bit about more general effects on all of us, whether we're a child or not. There's been evidence for a long period of time, really since there was an unintended exposure of people in Japan and Taiwan. There's been evidence that exposure to dioxins and furans and especially PCBs cause birth defects. They cause a reduction in IQ in children that are exposed before birth through their mother's body and through breastfeeding. And as those children grow, they have abnormalities of many different organ systems. The amount of exposure that most children today receive is certainly much less than was what occurred in these two accidental exposures. But what's happened over time is that while PCBs used to be only at a few industrial sites or waste sites or contaminated sites, they've now sort of spread everywhere. And they've spread by air because they're semi-volatile compounds. One of my studies involves people at St. Lawrence Island, Alaska, which is just below the Arctic Circle. These people have a traditional lifestyle, which means they eat whale, seal, and walrus primarily. You can't grow anything that far north. And even though they're far removed from industrial facilities, because these chemicals are fat-soluble and they migrate by air, these people have very high levels of PCBs and some of the pesticides in their bodies and suffer the diseases that result from that. Now, the levels in what I should also back up and say that in the case of PCBs and most of these chlorinated pesticides like DDT, we outlawed the manufacture and use of these back in the late 70s or early 1980s. And the recent POPs Treaty, as it's known by the United Nations, outlaws their use and manufacture. That was signed by, I've forgotten not exactly how many countries, but it's now, it was in May 2004, and this presently has 172 country parties and 151 country signatures. The convention was entitled The Outlawing of the Dirty Dozen, which included just those compounds that I mentioned, dioxins, PCBs, and chlorinated pesticides. Since that time, it's become apparent that there are other nasty, persistent chemicals, and they include things like the brominated flame retardants that are part of our upholsteries and computers. These are compounds that were added to industrial products to reduce the chance they would catch fire. But they're structurally related to PCBs, and we all have them in our bodies now. So even though the PCBs and the DDT and that sort of thing haven't been manufactured recently, they're so persistent in the environment and so persistent in our bodies that we can measure them in a blood sample from just everybody. And furthermore, what we are finding is that the levels that most people in the U.S. and other developed countries have in their bodies are associated with increased adverse health effects. Now, I've talked about the effects in children, which is what the World Health Organization report has. Increased cancer, reduced neurobehavioral function, so decreased IQ, more shortened attention span, so you get the symptoms of ADHD. You get PCBs have endocrine effects, and so girls reach puberty at a younger age. Boys, when they grow up, have reduced testosterone with reproductive effects there. PCBs interfere with thyroid function, so that may be one of the components that relates to the effects of IQ. The studies, and I've been involved at Akwesasne for over 20 years now, in measurements of PCBs in blood and in breast milk. And in the largest part of the study, we studied almost 1,000 of the residents of Akwesasne. And while their PCB levels are not strikingly higher than the general U.S. population, they are on average higher. We know the route of exposure, what it was primarily, which was consumption of fish that were contaminated with PCBs. But we find that that breathing in the PCBs from the air, if you live near a landfill that contains PCBs, they go into the air, you breathe them in. And we could demonstrate in younger Mohawks that in their blood we could find the same pattern of PCBs that we can measure in the air. The more volatile PCBs are those that have fewer congeners, and they're less persistent, but they still are found in the blood. And just because they're not so persistent does not mean that they don't have adverse health effects. Now, for adults, we had demonstrated this among the Mohawks, and it's been demonstrated in other populations, even at background levels of exposure. The greater the concentration of PCBs in the blood, there's a proportionate reduction in memory function. Even if you're only exposed as an adult, we're showing elevated risk of diabetes, of heart disease, of hypertension, not just in the Mohawk studies, but other studies we've been involved in. So it's just about all of the diseases of older age, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, thyroid disease, bone and joint diseases. So these are pretty nasty things. Now, the function of this call is to try to find out how we can reduce exposure. Well, much of the exposure does come from food, and it can be from eating fish that are contaminated because they live in contaminated waters. All of these compounds are fat-soluble, so they're not found in lean meat, but they're found in all animal fats. They're found in whole milk, in eggs, in butter, in Big Macs, in chicken McNuggets. At relatively low levels, but you know, we all eat a lot of these foods all the time, and so they do accumulate in our bodies. And the levels that we have in the average person's body are interfering at various levels with our normal physiology. So the big question, and I think this is where we'll go on and talk more about it, is how do we reduce our exposure? We can't stop eating, we can't stop breathing the air, we can't stop drinking the water. We've got to find ways of getting these nasty chemicals out of all of these routes of exposure. Let me stop there, and we can go on to discuss this at greater length.
Yeah. Hey, Donald.
Hey, Larry. How's it going?
I'm good. I just got out of the doctor's office, so I'm a little bit late. I apologize for that.
That's all right. It's perfect timing. Would you like to jump in? Would you like to jump in and give us a little bit of your story, and then what we're ready to do? You know, I want to hear from the different people on the call as to how they have been involved on POPs, your case with the PCBs at the former GM powertrain site. Let's start with that. Tell us about it.
Okay. Well, my name's Larry Thompson, and as pretty much everybody knows in the North Country, I've been involved with PCBs for quite some time over the past 35 years. My family and I grew up in the area, and the bottom line is we're trying to find justice. And the way the law is set up now, it would seem that at this point in time, General Motors has gotten away scot-free, and I'm trying to pull them or rein them back in to own up to the wrongdoings that they've done over the past years, as well as New York State not monitoring them and giving them free rein all those years and letting them pile all these chemicals off to the ground with no underlining. And they just are, abusing the situation and abusing the law. They got experts to know how they can navigate through the law, and they are where they are today. But if the people have their way, I have to say the people by way of 1% and is ruling the law, I guess you could say, or getting away with the law. The 99% are stuck with no protection. So what we're going to do is go in the direction of reining them in and hold them to the carpet and have them answer all to the wrongdoings that they've done over the past 35 years, 40 years. And that's all we're trying to achieve, is to bring attention to their wrongdoings and make them own up.
Tell us a little bit about what your experience with health, you know, what is the health of the people you know at Aquasotney like? Tell us
well,
about these problems.
I would have to say, it's pretty much to where what is normal. Anybody that was brought up around that chemical site, I would have to say they were robbed of being normal because of the fact that one has to push themselves to get through the day because they're always in, you know, they're fatigued, they got headaches, they got sickness, they got pulmonary, they got heart trouble. And this has been going on for quite some time. I myself properly been going in this direction as far as being fatigued and pushing myself probably for the past, 30 years. I was tired and amongst other things, but I'm not the only one. There's a lot of problems on our reservation, and I would have to go beyond the reservation. I would have to go all the way around the North Country that people are suffering in. And what we need here is, I would say, a study, which has experts brought into the picture, epidemiologists, so that people could be made aware of what the chemicals are doing to the people. Because what we have here is general surgeons or general practitioners that, deal with the common cold and broken bones and stuff like that, but they're not aware of what chemicals do to the human body, and this is what we're trying to bring to the area so that studies can be done and experts can be brought in so that the people will know that what's at hand here.
Don, so, can I jump in?
Yes.
This is Deborah Krause. I'm a widow and an artist, and I think what we're all really wanting from this whole study, I don't think we need any more study or research. I think the numbers are there. What we need is corporate social responsibility, and I think that it has to be pushed at the grassroots level to get it on the radar, because Supreme Court has given them carte blanche through, the same protections as humans, the corporation needs to be responsible for the social effects of what has happened to our humanity's physiology. And I wish we could figure out a way to make that happen. It does look like it happens in little bits and pieces, but it's so vast and so overwhelming. There's so many issues that are filtering down through the generations now that it's difficult to grasp, but CSR is really where it needs to go at this point.
I agree. The research has been concluded to a large extent. Lots of research done. I really totally believe that it is time now to get both the corporate responsibility and the government responsibility and see action taken that will actually result in people having less of the POPs in their bodies. You know, and one of those actions, I believe, will be to get those PCBs out of the industrial landfill there, the former GM powertrain site. If we could accomplish that much, just getting GM and government to work with the public to remove that particular source of PCB exposure, this breathing, the PCBs that come out of there, and they're going into groundwater too, I believe that will be a concrete step that we could accomplish, and it would involve the corporate responsibility and governmental responsibility.
Dr. Carpenter, how can we make this happen? How can we push this forward?
Well, that's part of the problem, because it's certainly not easy. The action by the federal government is key, and EPA is the federal organization that really has the most leverage here. Now, unfortunately, and I don't know the details of the situation on the GM Foundry site, but there have been other sites where you know, agreements are made with industry that if you do this, then you'll get off without doing anything else. But the GM site is on the national priority list. That means it's a federal Superfund site. And there is just overwhelming evidence that these landfills containing high levels of PCBs are not contained. I've been involved not only at Akwesasne, but in Anniston, Alabama, where PCBs were manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
And there we could demonstrate elevated levels in the air from capped landfills, just like those at the GM site, that were the air levels were elevated up to 3 miles away. And people that lived in that distance of 3 miles all had elevated PCBs. Now, that air exposure was in addition to the dust that blew on their gardens and in their houses and any other extra contamination from eating local fish and that sort of thing. But it's a matter of applying pressure on government agencies that have the control over pressuring industry. Industry is not very vulnerable to just pressure from the community, although that's valuable also.
So there really isn't any way, unless, you know, I start with my local congressman to get something on the radar for EPA to come back and push and pressure the corporations to clean up their own messes.
No, that's absolutely correct. And Larry, perhaps you can say a little bit more about what the EPA status is with regard to GM.
This is Dana Lee Thompson.
Hi, Dana.
Hi. Well, in regard to EPA, when they first did the ROD, they did ROD 1 and ROD 2, they came with the determination that they wanted to keep it there. And the part, what you talked about, of the aeration, they adamantly say that doesn't happen, but we know that it is happening, not just being aerated, but out actually moving underground and into our waters. And one of the things is that, unlike the citizens of the United States, like if you go to your congressman and stuff like that, all of our people do not participate in the like we don't vote and stuff in the national elections. So Congress people or Senate people, they're really not interested in hearing from us because we don't vote. But I think that one of the things that has to happen is that under international law, on if you look in under genocide, that this is what I believe that General Motors, the state of New York and the United States is doing against our people, because there's certain criteria that happens when you do genocide against a certain group of people, and you know what they're being harmed from, but you don't do anything to correct it. And so looking at it from an international perspective, that's what General Motors has done. And then at the same time, the state of New York and the United States like have participated in that, because for us, it's changing our whole race of people, because unlike others in the United States, we can't go to another country and get more Gunyankehage people, and it's impairing us where it's of a detriment to our future. And as Dr. Carpenter said earlier about Anniston, Alabama, and different sites all over the world, they already know different things that have happened. So just because it's at Agwizasne, it doesn't mean that it's not happening. It is happening. And our community, we have a 65% rate of diabetes.
Oh, my God.
And in one family at Racket Point, well, I'll even say it now, my husband's family, his mother was 43 years old when she died, what they called of congestive heart failure. But later on in years, my husband and all his family don't have thyroids, and then they understood that that's really what their mother must have suffered from, because they are the same, feel the same way. The only thing is she was never diagnosed like that. She was 43 years old. He had a brother. His name was Leslie. He died of heart failure at 39 years old.
Oh my God.
My husband's older brother had to have open heart surgery. My husband's other brother had open heart surgery. My husband had open heart surgery. None of their family have thyroids. So we're like at ground zero as far as being living next to that dump and being exposed all those years. So this, and that's just one family, and there's many other families. And so the thing of it is that we do have two clinics in Agwizasne that are inundated by all the disease patterns and things that are happening. And it's not that the doctors are bad doctors or nothing like that, but they're not environmental physicians, where instead of the people going on a merry-go-round to find out what's wrong with them, they, because they're not trained in that, and this is what we're looking at. General Motors has to remove that dump, because if the dump isn't removed, our people are going to be removed and removed forever. And this is what we're fighting for General Motors to do what's right and not to have people like the EPA, you know, go along with their program to say to keep it there. I mean, we're fighting for our survival. It's not, you know, and the survival of many other people. And so we always hoped for these last 32 years since we've been involved in trying to get General Motors to remove the dump that they would do what's right. But it seems like that, you know, I guess maybe if you're a corporation and you have friends in Washington or Albany, you can get to do what you want. And we just hope that the people, you know, open their minds, because it's not right for a community as small as ours and the North Country to suffer under the conditions that we have been suffering under.
I agree.
Yeah, well said. I've tried to get my Congressman William Owens, in the former 23rd Congressional District of New York, and now he's the person that is the office holder in the new 21st Congressional District of New York. I tried to get Congressman Owens to call upon the scientists in the CDC and the EPA and the, you know, the National Cancer Institute. I've tried to get him to call upon those scientists to come to him and educate him about whether there is a disease problem with POPs exposure. and he will not do it. He forwards my letters to these entities, these governmental entities, and they write back to me, these kind of avoiding the issue, sliding around the issue, you know, just not dealing with the issue kind of letters, and that's all that happens. And then Congressman Owens says he has no more resources to invest in this matter, and then they think they're out the hook. I don't know. Trying to get these Congress people to do something is like, you know, it's ridiculous. They're just so
Well, maybe from the international perspective, I don't think the United States would want to be, you know, brought charges of genocide in the international court, because that's what they're doing.
Well,
you know?
It is genocide, and it's silent, and it's apparent that it's a money making. I hate to say this, but they're making money through the medical industry and the pharmaceutical corporations at the detriment of our human genome. And I just can't figure out why they would allow it to happen unless it is just strictly for depopulation. So.
Well, the thing of it is, in our culture, the first president of the United States, George Washington, our people gave him a name. And in our language, it's called Lana Tagayas. And what that means is town destroyer. And the reason why he was given that name, because he ordered General Sullivan and his troops to ravage all our settlements and villages and burn them down and burn all our food and everything and destroy. They call it the Sullivan Campaign. So the first president was given that name. And his name hasn't changed today, even under President Obama, because they haven't changed their way, and he still that's how he's referred to, Lana Tagayas, town destroyer.
I know that there's a lot of pain and there's a tremendous amount of suffering going on throughout our nation and globally, and I have to move beyond that. I have to become proactive or lose my mind. So I just really am interested in how to move the dialogue forward, because if it is just a genocide, there's not much we're going to be able to do unless we pick up arms. So what direction do we need to go in?
Go ahead.
I think that the direction that has to be gone on is that the people have to use more humanity, meaning the general population, because they're the ones who are suffering under these conditions, and that's why they're, you know, trying to bring awareness across the country, not just in the environmental issues, but in different issues, because they feel that they're not being listened to. And I think that the swell of that, of the people standing up and just wanting to live a normal life and live free in a good way. And I believe that the grassroots people, they are, you know, setting the stage for the rest of the country to say, look, we have to do something, because we all have to live in this environment, and it's not right. I'm not against the business in that aspect, but in our culture, when we do something, we're supposed to look 7 generations ahead so we don't harm anyone. And I think that's the principle that these corporations, it's not saying we don't want them to make money. They can make money, but they have to do it responsibly. They're not going to harm anyone or anything. And I think that that's a principle that they have to take upon themselves, because they have many, many sites like this across the United States where people are suffering under those conditions. And as my husband said to me, he said, the human beings, we pump our blood through our system, but corporations like General Motors only want to pump dollars for profit, and they have to change that. They have to change that, and they have to look at what's right for humanity. And I think that's the direction that the population has to go in, and then we can make change. But if we don't think from being human beings, then I think we're all in a lot of trouble.
we are.
I'd like to see public education done at Aguas Sosnes, so more of the people up there knew about what the PCBs have done, and knew that the PCBs were not only in the fish in the St. Lawrence River and in that toxic mound, but also in the beef and the pork and the ice cream and the cheese, any place where there's animal fat, because those people do not know that. They do not know that at all. Their government up there has not told them that.
Definitely not. Larry, I'm back in here, Larry. No, for sure.
Do you have any ideas on how we could do more public education up there at Aguas Sosnes?
Well, exactly what we're doing right here, right now, I guess.
I wish Reen Cook with that CKON radio station would do another talk show with Dr. Carpenter and Craig Arquette with the, you know, the Aguas Sosnes Task Force and Environment, and just put it out there that the public is being exposed to PCBs when they go to the supermarket, just as everybody else in the world is, plus what you guys got there from GM.
And from Alcoa and from Reynolds. So it's not just GM that's a problem there either.
That's right,
it's the entire global corporation. They're all in it together.
That's right, and the corporations are all upstream, upwind from us, and you know, we're downwind, so we're getting inundated left, right, and center.
Yeah.
By way of the air, the water, the animals that we consume, the fish, there's no end.
Well, Dr. Carpenter, just a few years ago, I learned that there are vegetables that uptake dioxin as well. That I was unaware of prior.
Yes, that's true. There are really two ways that does happen. Now, some vegetables like cucumbers and zucchini have a waxy coat,
mm-hmm.
and these persistent organics that are in the air can dissolve in that waxy coat.
Mm-hmm.
But even a leaf, lettuce, spinach, they have little air pores on the underside of the leaf. And while the PCBs don't actually bind, they can accumulate inside of the leaf. This is pretty minor in relation to what you get, however, from any animal fat.
Right.
So, you know, we can measure PCBs in just about any plant. Actually, one thing that's very interesting is my colleague Mark Hermanson in Anniston, Alabama, he followed the air movements by measuring tree bark. There's enough fat in tree bark, so it becomes like a passive monitor of what the PCB concentration is in the air. And it's very high in the tree bark closest to a landfill, just like the situation at GM. And then as you go further away, it goes down to background after about 3 miles.
So now, if we wanted to just take one approach to make something significant happen that we could all do, which would be the elimination of the recycling of animal fat back into feed of food animals, would we just need to work with our congressmen?
Absolutely. I think that's the only way. You know, I was part of a National Academy of Sciences panel a number of years ago that issued this report on dioxin-like compounds in the food supply.
Yeah.
And it's been standard practice approved by the Department of Agriculture and other health agencies to allow this recycling of waste animal fat. So all of the chemicals that got into the environment, 30 years ago when we were still making these things, are just being recycled.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, it's not necessary. It's cost effective because animals like cows are not normally carnivorous. They eat grass and hay. But they grow more rapidly if they're fed fat.
Right.
And this waste fat is basically available from slaughterhouses. I mean, you could have them grow equally well if you fed them soybean oil or canola oil or any of these other oils, because the vegetable-based oils have almost no PCBs in them.
Well,
but we're feeding them these vegetarian animals, we're feeding them waste animal fats, and then that gets in our food. So it's something that could be outlawed by the government. but there's been no movement for doing that through pressure from the agricultural community, because this is a cheap way of getting animals to grow more rapidly.
Right.
And, you know, the only option I think that any of us have is to work through our elected representatives, many of whom don't even understand how serious this problem is.
Our group has had a petition before the U.S. FDA since 2004 to ban the feeding of waste animal fat to food animals, a formal citizen petition. And it's in the Office of General Counsel, and it's been there in the Office of General Counsel with FDA for a very long time. And I do not believe they have any intention of ever even responding to our petition, let alone banning the feeding of waste animal fat to the food animals. And it's because guys like Rob Taylor, a former Monsanto executive, is the Deputy Commissioner for Food at FDA. You know, we're just talking about a government that's run by the corporations, and it's the corporations that are the problem. It's almost like that maybe we should just forget about the government. They're not going to do this because they are the corporations. They're not going to do the right thing.
Okay, so we've taken it to the next step, which is education, educate, and eliminate specific things from your diet, like fish and meat and chicken and everything that has body fat in it. But that's not going to help the people who can't avoid it or can't spend the money to filter their water.
The people that was asking breathing it.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm living off the coast of Fukushima at the moment, so I've got many other worries as well.
I believe in the education. I think the best thing that we could do is to educate those people at Aguasasni, the people within 3 miles of that toxic mound, of that former GM site. If the people within 3 miles of that mound, if all of them came out in the streets in the village of Messina, which is nearby and is part of the U.S. more so than, you know, Aguasasni has representatives in Congress. Think if all the people within 3 miles of that dump there at GM ended up in the streets of Messina, that would make a difference with the Congress people and GM.
And well, there certainly is an unusual problem with Native American populations, because they're viewed as sovereign nations. And as Dana Lee was saying, many of them don't vote, and many of our elected representatives don't pay much attention to them. So I think it really behooves the rest of us to make very clear that this is unacceptable. It may be primarily Mohawks that are affected by the GM site, but it's not exclusively Mohawks. And it's just not acceptable to have a major industry like General Motors get away with constantly exposing people to dangerous levels of these contaminants. We have that in other places. It's Monsanto and Anniston. It's General Electric and along the Housatonic, along the Hudson. And there are just many of these sites. And we've got to have national policies that get them cleaned up so that people aren't made ill.
Got to be the pressure from the people. Pressure from the people is the only thing that'll make a difference.
I'm just not so sure about that anymore. With all these bills that have been passed and these laws that have been signed, and I don't want to say the F word, and it's not the other F word. It's fascism, but there is something going on here that is very open and in your face, but no one can do anything about it. Very frustrating.
Yeah, I like this Occupy activity that's going on around the world. I think that I would like to occupy the New York State Department of Health. They certainly have a role here. They have scientists that are paid by New York State taxpayers to know about POPs, and yet they are forbidden to talk to me when I try to talk to them about POPs exposure from the general food supply, try to talk to them about diseases caused by POPs. They won't talk. If we could get maybe some people together from Aquasasni and from St. Lawrence County, St. Lawrence River Valley's got a lot of POPs problems. The St. Lawrence River moving them out from the Great Lakes Basin. we're all breathing pups here from the Great Lakes Basin. If we could just somehow convince even a public health entity as small as the New York State Department of Health, it is quite big actually, but nothing compared to the CDC, if we could say, get them to wake up that the people want a health department that is for the people's good, not for the corporation's purposes of deceiving the public about chemical exposure and disease, I would do it. I would love to occupy the New York State Department of Health.
I'd like to occupy my congressman's office. So maybe that's...
Well, at least we will be kind of putting our threads together with the fabric of the whole Occupy movement. I would like to do that. You know, if anybody else on this call is interested in doing an Occupy, I'll be right there.
You know, just one note, the director for the Health Department Center for Environmental Health was just fired last week or the week before.
Yeah, like I said, the F word is really...
Well, you know, he was fired because he was opposing fracking.
Yeah,
which
that's what I'm saying. It's very obvious that there is something going on that...
Well, it's a statewide policy, so, you know, the Department of Health is a political entity, and we have a governor that wants to promote economic development and industry.
Uh-huh.
So everything that comes from the Health Department is not necessarily originating there, and maybe we need to focus more on the governor as well as on other elected state representatives.
Sounds good
right.
to me.
But how do we do it? You know, how do we do it? How do we do it? The shale gas movement, the fracking movement, that is very powerful, and they seem to be quite organized. Maybe we should tie, you know, kind of like link together our PUPS activism with their shale gas activism and just have...
Well, I think all of these issues are related because we're all exposed to a variety of environmental chemicals. They may cause different diseases depending on which chemical it is. But all of these issues are the same. It pits industries that are making money by exposing people to dangerous chemicals against the public's health.
And then on top of that, they have dissected the body and told us that you need a specialist for this and a specialist for that and a specialist for this and nothing is related. Very terrifying, as far as I can see.
Donald?
Yes?
This is Judy Herkimer from the Housatonic Environmental Action League in Connecticut. You might remember in 2003, the Housatonic River Initiative, the Housatonic River Keeper, and our organization, HEAL, convened the first ever PCB Congress in Fairfield, Connecticut.
I do remember.
And we invited First Nations peoples throughout South America, North America, Alaska. Akwesasne was invited. We had representation from the Alaska PCB contingent. And we convened in Fairfield University because it's the same town that General Electric, who is our responsible party for the contamination of our Housatonic River, their corporate headquarters are located there. It was a most successful gathering, and I can tell you in our experience that responsible parties like nothing worse than to have grassroots, on-the-ground people coming together and sharing notes, coming together and creating documents. We wrote the Declaration of Independence from PCBs. We got a lot of press. We had a protest outside the headquarters of General Electric. And I think it's hard, like Dr. Carpenter says, right now when you see the President of the United States with Jeffrey Immelt, who is the CEO of GE, sitting at the right hand of the President at every photo op, we've got our work cut out for us. But if this current president gets elected again, some of the pressures that are on him will be relieved, because it will be his last term in office. And a lot of these offices, especially the president, are purchased with lots of money from industry, lobbyists, you name it. So we're gearing up again right now. We're having a conference, a forum, this coming Thursday, next Thursday, in Lenox, Massachusetts. Dr. Carpenter is generously coming to speak, as he always does, on PCBs and their adverse effects on wildlife. I'm showing a movie down here and having called Good Things to Life, PCBs, Our Town, and GE, and a book signing and an art show all together. I think it would be a brilliant idea if we all got together and convened the second PCB Congress someplace else, and outside of Connecticut.
Yeah, California, anytime.
If you want to organize it, and we'll spread the word, and we'll be there. We raised funds for a lot of the entities that could not afford to make it to Connecticut, and we were able to get some of the First Nations peoples here without charge to them. We have known reporters in Indian Country Today Media Network who are willing to write stories about this and disseminate it through Indian Country. And, they don't like it when we gather. They don't like it at all. So, Donald, and as for the next seven generations, we are this generation. We can do what we do. Some of us are getting older, and we're going to fight the good fight as long as we can and then hand it off. Some of our actions and activities, we would not have gotten some of what we've gotten along this river and along this community, and particularly in Pittsfield, without people like Tim Gray. So the good fight continues, and it is about educating the next younger generation that are going to take over from us. And it's a tough nut. We have the good fortune of a massive amount of literature that's coming out right now. Theo Colburn, Diane Dumanowski, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's literature that's coming out, all of the body of literature that Dr. Carpenter has generated along with his colleagues. There's a lot going on right now that we can compile and use to our benefit.
I think Akwesasne would be a great place to have one of these conferences, a PCB conference. I would be happy to help work with something like that.
That would be a good thing. But I'd like to know if you could forward that information, because I think I'd like to organize to take a group of people from Akwesasne to your meeting next month or next week. Did you say?
Absolutely. What's your email address?
Gunawage, Khnawake @hotmail.com.
Okay, and your name was Denny or Donnie?
Dana, D-A-N-A.
D-A-N-A.
Base, capital L-E-I-G-H, Thompson.
Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll send you out our information on what's going on here. I'll send you some of the historic documents that we have on the first PCB Congress, and
could you forward it to Don too, so he could disseminate it amongst all of us?
Yes.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I've got your email address. It's good that this is happening. These kinds of little gatherings, even on conference calls, that's how bigger things happen, you know. And Lois Gibbs, I'm sure Lois Gibbs from Love Canal would be interested in helping out with a gathering of the second PCB Congress. I'll talk to Tim Gray, and, you know, maybe we've just started something here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sounds like a great step. Well, we've been doing this for about an hour. Are people ready to wrap it up, or you got any more that you want to do?
Okay, we can wrap it up.
I'm okay with that. I feel like we've made some progress. You know, we've figured out a concrete path to follow along, education and this thing of PCB Congress.
Yep.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, hope to hear you.
Thanks to everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right,
Doctor.
Bye.
This has been a Cancer Action New York conference. The conference was on the subject of persistent organic pollutants exposure minimization. The time has come for the corporations and the government to start acting on science, and the people are determined that they will do so. Good day.